right. Good morning, everybody. I hope your Monday's off to an awesome start. We are ready to take care of you between now and 8 o'clock this morning. Early on a Monday, that's nobody's favorite time of the day. It's a decision, though, and my co-host for the morning will tell you as much. He made the decision to, what's this fast you're on, George?
72-hour water fast.
72-hour water fast. This, of course, George Meany. If you don't know him already, then where the hell have you been? George has been with us for 10 years as a client, a sponsor, a friend, and someone who always brings really cool and useful and interesting stuff to the show. So we decided this morning, because Leanne Moll is absent again, this time due to her accident. Did you hear what happened to her?
No.
She got her fingers caught in a door hinge.
No.
Oh, yeah. They blew. It looks terrible. I'm not even going to show you the pictures because it'll put people off of their breakfast this morning, or their coffee, or whatever.
The leverage on a door hinge.
Listen, that woman, I don't know, but she seems to be like, the stories that she has accumulated in her 40-something years, it's just like two lifetimes couldn't fit all those stories in. She's insane. So Leanne is not here this morning. She will be back next week. And it's also the last week of May, and it's the last week before the elections. Well, it's the last Monday before the elections. The old people and the people who have work to do on election day will be voting tomorrow. And I think today as well. I think there's a special start today. Did you watch the president's announcement last night?
No.
Okay. I'll admit I had it on the background. I was just curious. I thought maybe he's going to call off the election. Maybe there's some kind of last minute skullduggery going on, but there was none of that. So if you missed it, you missed nothing. All he was saying was like, please don't kill each other at the polls.
Fellow South Africans.
Yeah. It was completely stupid and unnecessary. But I did see it, and I'll vouch for you. You don't need to pay attention to it if you didn't. If you missed it yesterday, that's all good. I hope you had a good weekend, and hopefully got some rest in. Oh, I had the laziest Saturday and Sunday. Proper lazy days. I did get to gym on both days, but otherwise I did nothing. Nothing.
Yeah, slept a lot. Pretty much nothing yesterday.
But yeah. Ate a lot. It was just, I felt this morning, ooh, you're going to have to work hard this week. You know?
Yeah.
That's a weekend.
Yeah, that's a proper.
And yours, you cheap say you weekend. Just
did. I just did, yeah, yesterday I did pretty much hardly anything.
Nice.
Watched, I'll try to watch the Grand Prix, and then my DSTV decoder gave hassles.
Of course you would be watching the Grand Prix. I heard there was a big crash.
Yes. Red Bull crashed out of the first lap.
But like monster.
Proper. The four wheels were off.
I saw a thing on social media. You see, again, I know nothing about Formula One, but this is the amazing thing about living in 2024 is that you get just enough of an update for you to be able to have a conversation about this. And I saw that one of the cars stopped just inside the tunnel. And the reaction time on these guys is just insane. Like, they're coming around the corner and they just see this car and they're like, straight out of the way.
Yeah.
And you're like, I don't know if ordinary us, like, we wouldn't be able to do that.
That's proper fighter pilot reaction.
It's incredible, right?
Because going into that tunnel, I think they're doing something like 100 something miles an hour. By the time they leave the tunnel, they're at almost 190 miles an hour, which is very fast.
Whew. Do people expect you, because you're the CEO of Auto Trader, which is the largest car selling market in South Africa? Just got to say that. Like, it's the biggest website for anyone who wants to buy a car. And people go on there, people like me, and they just shop around, even though they're not really buying. But even though you're the CEO of Auto Trader, you don't watch Formula One like some of these people who are complete fanatics, but you're expected to know everything, right? Because they think, well, George knows everything about cars, so he'll know everything about Formula One.
Well, you talk like that. I often get friends and acquaintances when something goes wrong with their car. I'm expected to know the answer.
Yeah, George, my car's making a funny sound. What are you going to do? What do you suggest? You go like, open the bonnet. Just look to the right there. There's a thing there. Just tap that with your spanner. I'd give them shit advice if I were you. I'd like, just because if you do it once, they'll leave you alone, right?
Yeah, well, if I give them the wrong advice, it's going to go pear shaped, right? I don't want to put anybody's life in danger.
Put oil into that thing that says water.
I think water into the thing that says oil is worse.
Oh, man. I met this dude the other day, and I thought of you. He's running a little business in Midrand where he does detailing on cars.
It's a big thing now.
It's amazing, right? And everybody wants to personalize. If you think about it, people, they personalize their phones, they personalize their wardrobe, they personalize their house, obviously. Mm. A lot of those things you'd say, well, duh, why would I have a copy and paste version of all that stuff in my life? But the car thing, most people for the longest time just bought the car off the production line and didn't do anything to it. And most cars, I mean, especially like the Ubers that you'll drive now, are exactly like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the car detailing is a big thing, and it's big.
Huge business.
You know, many people change the color of their cars. They wrap the entire thing.
Yeah. And you get this this incredible like ceramic paint stuff that they put on now where the water just drips off.
Yeah.
Like this guy was telling me he can do this for me on my car. And I was like, well, how much is it? And then he gave me a quote, and it's not like...
No, it's not cheap.
But it's not like disgusting either. Yeah, I didn't expect to have to like remortgage the house, you know? Uh-huh. And I had no idea what I was in for there. But it's amazing to me that this is, even in this economy, there are enough people who are doing that stuff to their cars. And it's not just rich people, by the way. It's like people who really love their cars.
Yeah.
They want to have like a different badge on it, or they want to have a different color to everyone else, or they want to have like a line here that nobody else has, or maybe the rims must do this instead of that. It's pretty wild. It's
personalizing your life, right?
Yeah. But again, I mean, I was listening to a podcast the other day about 60s fashion, which is, I mean, you wouldn't expect to find me listening to a podcast on 60s fashion. But this was amazing because it's more of a history thing. And they were talking about how up to the 1960s, people didn't spend money on clothes. We don't, now you think, well, obviously people spend money on clothes. Most people, rich, poor, old, young, they all spend money on clothes, right? And we think of, well, you'll go and buy two or three t-shirts or whatever. That was never a thing. Like back before the 60s, men had three or four shirts. They would wear them until they were threadbare. They'd have maybe a suit or two, and they'd wear that for most of their working life. Seriously, you don't think about this is how
that's true.
They'd have one big overcoat, which would cost an absolute fortune, and that they'd probably pass on to their kids because it would be made of such thick fabric, and it would be such a like utilitarian thing. Only from the 60s did people start personalizing fashion and start buying disposable stuff. And, you know, like colorful stuff. There were no colors.
The disposable is the thing. I've got two jackets from my late dad.
Oh, yeah?
One is a leather jacket, but I'll wear it one day. It's a suit jacket.
Yes.
But it's made of leather.
Yes.
That thing is almost indestructible. And then I've got another jacket. Well, it's a coat, actually. It's almost down to past your knees.
Yeah.
Made of mohair.
Oh, that's awesome.
Both of these things come from London.
That's very gangster though, hey? The mohair one. You
mohair
look like,
jacket.
You look like one of the Krays.
It is. I must actually pull that thing out.
That's awesome.
I wonder if the moths have gotten to it.
Yeah, but when I think about like that, and that's so cool that you got those from your dad, because it's something that you'll probably pass on, because it's not going to get, unless you leave it and the moths eat it.
Yeah.
It's going to be good. And that vintage stuff comes back, right?
Yeah.
The point, though, is this personalization. It's like everything needs to be personalized. People really like that stuff. They want they even want their car keys to look different.
Well, I think there's two things. I mean, we're constantly at Auto Trader modifying the user experience.
Yeah.
And we're now starting to talk about, how do we create an experience that is unique to every human that comes to the platform?
Sure.
So you've been to Auto Trader's website. You've searched for certain makes, models, variants, price categories, whatever the case may be. You've, you know, can we configure the screen in a different way? Well, you know, I don't know about that. But but at least give the user what they want to see in their experience.
So your algorithm does a lot of that, right? So for example, if I've looked for sports cars.
Yes. You serve know, you with sports cars.
That then automatically, because I'm also subscribed to your mailer. So then I'll get like two or three emails every couple of days. And mostly they would be cars that I want to look at.
Related to your personal life.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily going to buy them, but it's nice to look, yes, you know. Yes. And I think that what percentage of your visitors do you think are window shopping?
In the upper echelon of the price categories, like the Ferraris, Porsches, Lamborghinis, a lot.
Almost all of them.
Yeah, they get most of the views and the and the least conversion. That's how we measure it.
Right. So does that irritate you? You're like, ugh, these people. Like, you don't have to keep the shop open like an actual dealer, right? But people go on at like 2 a.m. and they're like, oh, look at that. I wish I had that car.
I'd worry if you're going into Auto Trader at 2 a.m.
Hey, it happened to me. I promise you, not so long ago.
During lockdown, we saw a spike. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
When, if you remember.
So when guys are bored, it's either Auto Trader or porn or games. For some people, it's gaming. Or it's music. With girls, I think it might be a bit different, but I think girls also like to look at cars. You know, I've got a friend and she's massively into her car. She loves it.
I mean, the other thing we see from a personalization point of view is that there's probably two categories. One is personalization. The other is following the crowd.
Oh yeah.
So when we serve ads to people that say other people have been looking at this car, suddenly that car's popularity goes up.
Okay, this is fascinating because I don't know that we've done enough research on this crowd think, group think thing. Because in South Africa, it's also a big part of, and we're going into voting this week. And I wonder how many people will make their decision based on the last conversation they had with somebody.
Yeah.
You know, most of us are not really reading the manifestos and paying attention to the detail like Pumi, who reads these things voraciously, right? She's like, well, if you look at what the ANC says about this and the EFF says about that. And I'm like, most people don't know the detail. I'm a fairly well-informed person, but if you ask me about the policy differences between Action SA and BOSA, I'm not going to know. Mm. I'd be lying to you if I said I was, right? And people always ask me, like, I'm some kind of expert, and I'm like, don't ask me.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's like when your friends ask you to fix their car, you know? But I think for a lot of people, it's like, what is everybody else doing?
Yeah.
I don't want to be the outlier.
That's so true. It's you know, following the crowd or being a sheep. I had a conversation with somebody the other day about the elections. Oh, it's so hard. What am I going to do? Where are we going to, you know, where are we going to go in the future? Who's the right party to vote for? Do I vote for a small one? Then they can make no difference. I said to the person, this is my logic.
Yeah.
The best party to vote for is the one that can show a history and a track record.
Right.
Make a choice based
hopefully
on that.
Hopefully a good track record.
Yes. Oh. So those that have, so, you know, do the smaller parties have a track record? Ask yourself that question, yes or no. Do the bigger parties have a track record? And if that track record is positive on the economy, there's your choice.
See, you might be persuading people right now, George. There might be people who are making up their mind just based on what George has just said now. He's like, he's going to have more influence on the election than these politicians themselves doing these dumb rallies.
I doubt it.
I still want to know, like, what kind of person goes to a party rally? Unless they're actually a member of the party, who's going to waste their weekend going to the ANC one at FNB Stadium or the DA one? I don't even know where they did theirs, or the PA did theirs in Pretoria. And I'm like, who would go to these things? I mean, I know that there are obviously people who go for the free meal or the T-shirt or whatever. But if I think about the amount of effort that you'd have to go for one T-shirt, like those people would do better if they just stayed at home, saved the money for like 2 weeks, you buy the T-shirt yourself. I wouldn't go.
Every action in our life should be adding value.
Yeah.
Either to you or to the wider community and economy around you, right?
Yes.
So it's value get added. If you're sitting on the couch being a couch potato, what are you adding value to? Unless you're resting from a really hard gym workout.
By the way, I see Slippery Pickles says here, he goes to, or she goes, I'm not even sure if Slippery Pickles are him or her, but I want to see cars priced well below market value, but in good condition. Well, who doesn't?
There's a Slippery Pickle.
Yeah.
You have not been onto Auto Trader's website because on the left-hand side on the filters, there are price indicators. And those price indicators, you can filter for low-priced cars
under
the market. Yes.
And I always line them up from lowest price to highest.
And you can do that too.
You can filter them that way as well. What happened to Leanne today? Says just plain Jared. I did say it at the start of the show. I'm fairly sure she is still off with her broken hand or whatever, but she'll be in next week. I can do all four of those things on the internet at the same time, Gareth. I can multitask, says Slippery Pickle. Okay, that's all four of those things we spoke about. The music, the porn, the auto trader, and the gaming. Wow. Okay, you need four hands for that, but okay. Patrick says, I saw Gareth said he would vote MK if he only had the ANC, EFF, and MK to choose from. For some reason, the statement was controversial. Van Damme attacked. Okay, so I don't know who this person is. I wasn't trying to be rude or difficult, and I don't get into Twitter spats with people. I really don't. I've only been back on Twitter for four months. So I'm really not looking for fights. Mm. But I don't know who this person is. And she clearly is a big Rise Mzansi fan. Because I said if it was ANC, EFF, MK, or Rise, I would vote in this order. MK, ANC, EFF, Rise. Like Rise to me just don't seem to have any policies. And there was that guy in Cape Town who's like, white people, this and that. I'm like, okay, go to hell. Don't need that shit in my life. At least with MK and the EFF, you know where you stand, you know? Mm. We've got people, as you say, track record to deal with. And the same goes for the ANC, so I'd rather have them. I don't know how that's... Am I not allowed to say who I would vote for? I'm saying if you only gave me those four as a choice, that's how I would line it up. But I haven't entirely made my mind up yet. I had this brain fart over the weekend that imagine if one of these smaller parties, like the opposition party. So let's say it's got to be a substantial one, the DA, the EFF, the Freedom Front Plus, right? Because those are, or the IFP. Imagine if they just got together and made calls to all the other parties and said, listen, guys, no matter what happens, if the ANC gets below 50%, we're going to have to put together a government of national unity. But we'll do it in a big-hearted, smart, make South Africa great again way.
Mm.
In other words, what you'd do is you'd say, we'll make the IFP leader, Hlabisa, the president. We'd make Gayton McKenzie Minister of Safety and Security because he'd be so good. He just wants to get gangsters and criminals, right? Drugs. He wants to stop the borders from being porous. Give him that portfolio. He'd do the best job there. I'm telling you, a lot of people don't trust him.
Playing to people's passions.
But they would trust him in that job because he's the kind of guy who would take no nonsense. He'd clean out the bad policemen. He'd find out what was wrong.
Mm.
That's his whole thing. Give Musi Maimane the portfolio for education. He's always talking about how we need better education and higher education. Just smush basic and higher education together and give it to Musi. Give Herman Mashaba finance. He's never going to get a ministry on his own, right? None of these people are going to get into government on their own. But if you're clever and you're the DA or the Freedom Front of the EFF, you give it to them and you come to an arrangement. Give the EFF housing and water and sanitation or things where they can actually improve people's lives. And they're always talking about the poor. Here's how you help the poor. Housing. Social welfare is a good one for the EFF. You will distribute SASSA grants. Let's see them do it. Because I tell you what, if you've got a thing to prove and you're in government, you can't complain. And then what you do is you say to all these people, for the first 6 months of our government, you're not allowed to criticize anything because you're part of it.
Yeah.
So just sign this document. Anyone who criticizes is out straight away. But just for 6 months, and you obviously have the ANC in there as well because they're going to have a number of seats. So you give them their share. So if it's 48% or...
I would say 12 months, not even six. I mean, you need momentum.
12 months maybe. And you don't fire anyone in the bureaucracy for like 2 years. I know it's going to burn us and it's going to cost us. Mm. But for 2 years, you say to all the people who are in government, listen, guys, you have these 2 years to prove yourself on merit, right? And if you're not here on merit...
Meritocracy, definitely.
If you're not here on merit, then you can resign now. And we'll pay you out your 2 years, but you must go.
Yeah.
So in other words, you make the decision now. Do you want sheltered employment for 2 years where you try and prove yourself? Or do you want to pay out for 2 years and you can go and find another job in the private sector? And you start cleaning it out that way. And I'll tell you what, EFF fans will be thrilled that they've got two portfolios. The PA will be pleased that Gayton's in. Bursa will be pleased that Moosey's in. Action SA will be thrilled that Herman's in. You'll have the DA give Glynis Breitenbach justice and sort out a couple of others. And give the ANC the ones that they really care about, you know? I mean, like, there are all kinds of portfolios there that they're massively into, like public service and administration. And, you know, let them come in, but they're going to be monitored as part of a government and national unity by whoever it is. You have, importantly, I wouldn't say you let someone like John Steenhuisen be the president, but I honestly see this as working.
I mean,
if they could put their egos aside,
that's the problem, is the egos and you know, so many opinions.
I don't know. I had this wild idea and
I think your idea is a good one.
Yeah. Maybe it's just too little too late, right? Hi, Garrett. Since you decided to be independent after a long career in radio, how about you go and vote for the independent candidates? What do you mean? Zaki Ahmad? No, don't be ridiculous. I would not let Julius Malema run a fucking car wash, says Carl. Are you nuts? The EFF would steal all the money. No. If it's Sasa grants and they steal the money, then they're making enemies of their own supporters. Think about that. And I do think that there will be monitoring involved here. It's not going to be like you're running the portfolio as a free agent. You're part of the government. You're still going to cabinet meetings. And by the way, we reduce those cabinet positions to like 16. You have 16 cabinet posts. You don't need all these 40, whatever it is that we've got now. No deputy ministers. You don't need them.
Yeah.
Get rid of them.
Well, push them further down the, push those roles further down the ranks so that there's more people on the ground.
Correct. And
execution
also,
is the key.
And a big part of this needs to be that you take the important functions of government and you move them down to municipal and local level. That's a massive part of this, is that most of us don't deal with national government on a day-to-day basis. So make it local. And that's one of the reasons that I like the IFP in this election. I really do. Gareth, you're talking cuck to another level, says Arthur. Okay. You know what? I mean, call me an idiot, but I really believe that this is the one thing. You know how South Africa would get behind a government that's made up of all these parties? There's no one left outside. Everybody feels accommodated.
Well, that's a perfect coalition, right?
I reckon it could, but it needs enormous amounts of strength and force of will, and you need to be able to put people in a room and make the adult come out rather than the child. And I do think it could happen, man. I mean, I would just love to live in a country where all of those people are part of the government making it work, instead of standing outside pissing and shouting and crying and moaning and insulting. And I mean, tie them in. Say, look, you want this position in cabinet. You'll never get it on your own, Gayton, Moosey, you know, Herman. But this is a way you guys could make a difference. Anyway, I would love to see that happen. I don't think it will. I don't think our politicians are... I don't think they have the ability to put themselves last. And you know what? This would be like a founding fathers moment. Like when the US Constitution was adopted. It wasn't just Washington. It was Jefferson, Washington, Adams, Hamilton. These were all the people who put that country in the position that it was in when it was first founded. And this is what we need. And then take Thabo Mbeki's idea of the national dialogue, give him resources, give him all the power he needs to really get South Africans in the room and talking again, and we can figure out how we can restructure things to make it better. And make him the chair of that. It would be amazing. People would come, they'd help, they'd get involved. What South African citizen, if that was the case, wouldn't go, I'm in, what do you need from me? As opposed to, what are you going to give me?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
How can I help?
Anyway. Okay, call me a pie in the sky idealist, but there we are. That was my idea over the weekend. Who knows? Sunilis says, I believe elections should be about the future, not about the past, and historic track record isn't always the best predictor for the future. Look at Nokia. That's exactly right. I mean, this is a big passion of yours, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. You know, it's the past is not the, it's not the, it's not the predictor of the future, but it is one of the predictors of the future. You know, so what you're doing right now is the biggest predictor of the future.
Yeah.
But what you have done is the only way to tell whether you can be successful or not.
Is it your alarm?
It was.
That's normally, are you normally up at 6:28?
No. I've got a number of alarms that go off. I'm up at 4:30 every morning.
Yeah. I got a 4:30, 4:35, 4:40.
Okay.
Every 5 minutes, just in case. And it still doesn't always work.
No, it's really just markers to say, all right, you know, your gym needs to be done now.
Okay. Right. You're that organized.
Well.
Wow.
Not really.
I have ambition to be that organized. If elections were about the future, you'd see more young leaders in top positions, not those fat-bellied old bullies, says Bitcoin Butt. Yeah. Funny, Bitcoin Butt, you make me think of what we did on Friday. You can put up the picture of this guy who will be playing the interview out on Wednesday morning. You may recognize him. He's 77 years old now, but I interviewed him on Friday. We'll be playing it out for you. Robert Kiyosaki, the guy who wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yes, he's in South Africa, isn't he?
He is in South Africa. He's selling books and all kinds of things.
I've read his book. It's
really, you like it?
I love the principle. One of the biggest principles out of Robert Kiyosaki's book is that a home that you live in, that you own, is not an asset, it's a liability.
Wow. You see, I opened it up on some random page and it said something like, rich people don't use their own money and they don't have money in the bank.
Use someone else's money.
They borrow other people's money.
Leverage.
Yeah.
Leverage. But there's a massive principle behind productive and unproductive debt. Most South Africans get themselves into an unproductive debt state.
Hmm.
So you've got to use debt to make income. That's the big difference.
There we go.
If you're using debt to make income, hey, use all of everyone else's money.
Doesn't look too bad for 77, though, huh?
Brilliant.
And he still goes hunting. That's one of the reasons he comes here too.
Yeah.
And that obviously is very unpopular with some people. But I couldn't figure it out because there were one or two people here after meeting him and after hearing the interview said, oh no, he's a snake oil salesman.
How's that?
Well, you know, he wasn't actually selling anything on the show, but he does do these courses where you kind of learn to. And I suppose for some people, that would be the thing that he would get money out of you for. But I thought he was, you know, he was quite interesting and very outspoken about politics in America. My God, he's friends with Donald Trump and he has nothing nice to say about Biden. He's like, he's a criminal. And I thought, wow, okay, outspoken.
Kiyosaki is the biggest capitalist you'd find.
Yes, exactly.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Buisile says, first time I'm seeing Borge live. Face card matched the voice exactly as I've imagined listening to the podcast. Wow. Okay, Buisile, nice to have you on.
Very good.
B says, I saw Damon yesterday, almost unrecognizable. He was walking and very thin, maybe using the exercise alarm that George uses. Well, I hope you told him, I hope you said hello. Gareth, will you talk about Bitcoin with him? It's the best performing asset in the last 10 years. We did talk about it very briefly, and he mentioned it in the same vein as gold. He said it's a thing that will retain its value outside of government interference, which it should, although there are now governments getting involved in it too. So it's not as clean as it once was, because once the government starts taking an interest in these things, they tend to get bastardized. But I'm still not I've never been anti-cryptocurrencies. In fact, I'm a very big maximalist in that respect. But I think it'll be interesting for you to hear his comments. And we didn't talk about it for long, but the interview is about 30 minutes long. Mm. And we cover a lot of different things. Take a listen. I'm pretty sure he went bankrupt, says Carl. I think he's a scam artist. Well, declaring bankruptcy or insolvency is also a tool.
Well,
in
America, declaring bankruptcy is a strategy sometimes.
It's a way you get out of tax.
Yes.
Yeah. I saw, by the way, Zahara died a while ago, right? The singer. And I saw that SARS is going after her. It's like they're going after her estate for like those sons. You know, SARS is pretty awful. But to go after dead people's money is just, that's the worst.
Estate duty.
Oh, it's disgusting. It's just disgusting. I can't get it. It's just, there's nothing about SARS that makes me happy. All right. So take a listen, a look at this quickly. This is also interesting. The most dangerous cities in the world. This came out last week.
Aren't we like seventh?
I can't believe this. You tell me what you think, George. So here is a little graphic that says these are the top five most dangerous cities in the world. Okay. Fifth is Port Moresby in Papua New Guinea. That's like they had an incidence of cannibalism about 10 years ago there.
We are three of the top five?
We are three of the top five. I don't know if I believe this. Fourth is Johannesburg. Third is Caracas in Venezuela. Second is Pretoria. And first is Pietermaritzburg.
How do they measure this?
I don't buy this at all. I'm sorry.
Visa God.
I don't think this is right.
No.
I want to know what their methodology is. I mean, listen. No,
they haven't even got Brazil on that list.
No, exactly. And Caracas, Venezuela, third. You're telling me Maritzburg is more dangerous than Caracas? Maritzburg. I mean, they aren't. I mean, what? Really? Someone help me understand that. And the fact that Pretoria outranks Joburg and Cape Town is outrageous.
Yeah, Johannesburg's got to be more dangerous than Pretoria.
And Cape Town, for heaven's sake, with all the gangsters and drugs. Don't tell me that Pretoria is worse. I don't believe it. Not for a second. If anybody has any intel on this, I would love to know. Maritzburg, please. Who's got Maritzburg when they think of dangerous places? You hear people in America that come here as tourists. I don't mind coming to Joburg or Cape Town, but I won't go to Pietermaritzburg. I've heard it's terrible there.
Maybe it's the Scotland version, Maritzburg.
Maritzburg.
They beat each other up in the bars. That's
well, the only thing that's dangerous about Maritzburg, in my experience, is the cougars, like the divorced women over 40. That's the only dangerous thing about Maritzburg. And it's only if you're a guy and you're reasonably good looking. Otherwise, there's nothing to be... Please trust me, there's nothing to be scared of in Maritzburg. They're scared of all the Bursians in Pretoria, says Naked Goose, wearing their khaki shorts and pluckies in the winter. Yeah, but that's not dangerous. Apparently, they never had... this isn't accurate. What's their mythology, says 21 Savage. Not methodology, mythology in ranking these. Pretoria is there because of all the libs and potholes. There are libs in Pretoria. The libs are all in Joburg.
They're in
the East Rand.
East Rand, Bedford View.
No, exactly. Pretoria. What a lot of nonsense. Port Elizabeth was a few weeks ago labeled the most dangerous city in South Africa, says Patrick. PE is dangerous, yeah, but not the worst. Again, I don't believe PE is more dangerous than...
No.
What a lot of nonsense.
Well, that's not a nonsense.
All right, speaking of nonsense, here's James. Look at him. How's it, James?
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Good. Very, very good. How was your weekend?
It was great. Did a lot of work this weekend. Lots of sports action also.
Yes. So, yeah, lots of. Well, that's why we've got you here, James.
I hope so.
So tell us what you can tell us about the world of sport. This morning, of course, this is our little look back at what happened on the scoreboard over the weekend with Superbets. And James has all the details.
Let's start with, I wanted to show you a picture from the Monaco Grand Prix, but it's not loading into StreamYard.
That's not very good.
But I'm going to...
I wonder if we had a producer, if that could be solved.
That's hectic. So at the Monaco Grand Prix this weekend, George mentioned there was quite a big accident.
Yes.
I'm going to try to figure out how to get that picture on you.
Okay. We want to see it, but maybe after you've done.
Off the context, yeah. That's right. Charles Leclerc won his first Monaco Grand Prix with a lights to flag victory on home soil after a huge crash on that opening lap. That's the one that we mentioned. The race was red flagged on the first lap due to a big crash between Kevin Magnussen, Sergio Perez, and Nico Hülkenberg. Mm-hmm. After only just turn one, guys, with all three drivers unhurt despite high-speed collisions. So those top three, how it ended, Leclerc, Piastri, and then Carlos Sainz. So two Ferraris on a podium for the Monaco Grand Prix.
Yeah.
In the world of football, the FA Cup final happened this weekend. Manchester United fans are going to be slightly unbearable for the next while.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. They beat Manchester City
2-1. You've been a bit rude about them lately, haven't you?
They're not my favorite club.
So, in other words, you're going to have to eat humble pie for a couple of days.
Pretty
much. There are people in the comments who are quite pissed off with you. They're very anti-Man U sentiments coming from James.
I'm not good at hiding my biases towards Man United. But fair play to them. They did win a trophy this season. Erik ten Hag says he wants his future decided as quickly as possible, with the club preparing to review his contract. So, yeah, will Ten Hag stay? these are the questions we want to ask. He's won them two trophies in two seasons, so I don't think it'd be too bad of a move for them. In the world of PSL, Sundowns finally lost a game. They didn't do an invincible season this season.
But it doesn't matter.
They already won the league, you're right. But yes, they finally lost their last, very last game of the season, 1-0 to Cape Town City. Richards Bay beat Stellenbosch. Pirates drew with SuperSport United, which means Pirates finished second on the log. Chiefs embarrassingly lost to relegated Cape Town Spurs, meaning they finished 10th.
How the mighty have fallen. Ben brought this up on Friday with Chiefs, but it's just, it's so embarrassing that they're so shit.
Their worst ever.
Kaiser Chiefs used to be a monster juggernaut, like not that long ago. Very, very sad.
Here we are. And then Patrice came in and bought football, and here we are.
Yeah, V-Riss says, Ben called it on Friday. He said, bet on Man U against all odds.
They did, and they did actually speak about it quite a lot last week. Someone actually told me Man United were going to win 2-1, and that's what they said I should bet, and that was exactly the scoreline. So if I had bet it, I would have made some money, but I didn't.
Okay.
I'm my own enemy. Lastly, the Rugby Investec Champions Cup, Leinster beat Toulouse after extra time, 31-22 after extra time. And at full time, it was 15-15, that game ending 31-22. And then the Ben's EPCR Challenge Cup final, the Sharks won at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Fun fact. Sharks from South Africa, Sharks rugby, different sports and everything, have won a trophy at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium before Tottenham Hotspur have. So
that's embarrassing.
That's quite something.
Sure.
Yeah. And that is the sport.
Well, Sanele disagrees with you, says it wasn't a big upset, the Formula One. Verstappen was shit. Red Bull was shit. The man who deserved to win won. That's not an upset.
I didn't think it was an upset either.
I don't know. I don't know if Leclerc, he deserved to win that race.
So now we finally got someone here who actually knows something about Formula One.
The person who I think deserves to give Verstappen a go is the McLarens, especially Lando Norris.
Piastri's
good, but Lando Norris is just showing consistency.
Isn't that a cool name, though, Lando Norris? Right?
Yeah, it's a very cool name. He's such a nice guy as well.
It's like a mix of Lando Calrissian from Star Wars and Chuck Norris. How could you go wrong?
Lando
Norris. That's just
great. The trouble with Leclerc is he's inconsistent. He'll win, he'll get onto the podium, or he'll be nowhere. He's one of those kind of Euro or nothing.
Call it eccentric.
Yeah.
It's a good word. So Jason says, please thank Ben for the tip for Man United. I won 2,000 Rand.
Should have done it.
See, this is what happens. Yeah. Here we go. Someone else says in the comments here, Patrick says, I remember and almost put a 500 Rand on it. 8-1, do the maths. I'd be bawling this morning.
Wow.
Damn. You see, if you don't listen to Ben Sports on a Friday, you only really come for James to give you whether you won or lost, right?
Oh, yeah,
but on a Friday, he's giving you good tips here. I mean, the guy should be charging everybody for this. He should take a commission on every victory that is won. $2,000 for Jason over the weekend. Nice.
I shouldn't let my biases interfere with my betting in future.
No, Carl says he put 150 in United and won 1170.
Wow.
Yeah, that's very good. Very, very good. All right, so people are winning money based on the sport on this show. Excellent, excellent stuff. And of course, the sport is brought to you by Superbets, who support responsible gambling, strictly no under 18s. Winners know when to stop. The South African Responsible Gambling Foundation's toll-free counseling hotline is 0800 006 008, and you'll get some more sport with us on Friday. Thank you, James.
Thank you, guys.
See if you can find that crash for us. It'll be cool to watch. I think a lot of people just watch Formula One for the crashes.
Especially those tracks.
It's horrible, but then that's human nature, right?
Yeah, and you don't want to wish a crash on anybody.
No.
The cars are horrible. Much safer than they used to be. Much safer.
But again, I just have to say, like, those guys are incredible. The way they drive, the speed that they're able to make decisions at, it's phenomenal.
So they're trained. I mean, if you watch the driver view in the car, their thumbs are usually through the steering wheel, and the steering wheel is usually a, you know, almost a rectangular shape. The yes. thumb is through the steering wheel. They are trained that when a crash is happening to let the steering go, because the steering wheel can rip their thumbs, dislocate, break.
Wow.
Because you can imagine if that front wheel hits something and that steering turns viciously, you could dislocate and break your hand off if you're not careful.
So as they realize they're about to crash, they take their hands off
the steering wheel.
Good heavens. Wow. That's you're telling me things. I might even have to watch Formula One after this, George. You've achieved what no one else in the history of this show has ever done, like getting me to watch Grand Prix. That would be something. Leclerc isn't consistent, says KNA. Ferrari has been a mess for years, but they're peaking just on time for the 7 WDC to join them and get an 8th in Lewis, we trust. Okay, so they're obviously fans of...
Yeah. Very, yeah, okay. Well, I think part of the Ferrari... not winning for the last couple of years has been the cost cap. Because Ferrari is such a big company, they were able to throw money at Formula One for a long time. Now there's the cost cap, so all teams are almost equal in terms of the amount of money they can spend. And suddenly, if you go from being able to spend whatever you want to having a limit on what you can spend, suddenly you've got to be really efficient. And I think Ferrari suffered from that a bit. And they've just for the last 2 years been using AI to bring their costs down to design the car and the aeros and the engine bay. And now you can see they're starting to do better again.
That's amazing. So again, the accountants, got to get them involved.
Well, not really. These, you know, yes, the accountants, but it's forced them to go down the AI route.
Okay. I mean, that's an amazing use of AI that I didn't know about. Carl says that's the same reason I keep an eye on the ANC, car wrecks and own goals. And then Vera says here, in drag racing, apparently the driver's retinas detach sometimes when the parachute deploys. Holy hell.
I did not know that. I suppose. I mean, you're going from 300 k's an hour to very slow.
Okay, so we may or may not get that footage from the crash with James. He'll see if he can find that for us. I thought this is a great thing. Just put up that that picture of the sentence where the emphasis is on the different words. I just want to look at this quickly because this just shows you how complicated English is as a language, but also how important it is to put the emphasis in the right place. Okay, so this is the same sentence. I'm going to read it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times. And every time it means something completely different. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
I never said she stole my money. 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 Right? You getting this?
I'm getting it.
Everything different so far, right? I never said she stole my money.
Gee whiz.
I never said she stole my money. I never said she stole my money.
Which means she stole something else.
Every single word in that sentence can have emphasis on it, and it changes the meaning of the whole sentence.
So what if you combine two of them? Like, I never said she stole my money. So you could get a permutation of 3, 6, 7, 8 multiplied by 8. So 8
could,
squared.
You're saying you could emphasize two words.
Yes. And change the meaning again.
Uh-huh. So then suddenly, and this is why people go, oh, I don't know what you mean. Because if you don't learn in basic comprehension at school level, for example, that this is how complex a sentence can be. You think, oh, well, it means I never said she stole my money.
Hmm.
But what do you mean?
So this monotone people are onto something.
Yeah. I mean, that just shows you how complicated stuff can get.
Well, it just shows you how listening is an art on its own.
Hey, is Hanan on? Oh, he's here. Let's get to Dr. Hanan. Hey, Doc. I'm sorry. We were wasting your time. You're talking about people stealing money, and I never put the emphasis on the right syllable. Emphasis on the right syllable, as Leanne would say if she was here. How are you, Doc?
Yeah, I'm doing well. But actually, your conversation is very interesting psychologically as well, because definitions do matter.
Yeah.
And I get many people you know, throwing these big words that think they mean something, but they're very unhelpful. For example, if somebody comes along and says, I'm depressed,
yeah,
that sounds quite specific, but it's completely unhelpful and too general and doesn't mean anything unless you define exactly what you mean by that. And when you define things in very general and pixelated terms, mm-hmm. you are actually disempowering yourself to actually doing anything about it. So it's very, very much matters in the world of psychology as well.
So what do you do when someone pitches up and says, I'm depressed? Do you get them to dig deep and find the proper definition?
Completely. So one of my most common terms that I use in my practice is, what do you mean? Because depressed mean nothing to anybody. It doesn't mean anything. So if somebody get 100 people and all sound depressed, it means very different to every individual. For one person means my boss is being difficult. Another one, I'm financially strapped. Another person means I'm dealing with a difficult mother. Another one means I'm dealing with a lack of purpose in my life. It means very different things for very different people. And unless you define it specifically, you just don't have the leverage or the power to create a framework to work through it.
George has a question for you, because he drove in this morning and encountered our security guard, and he just has a general attitude question, which I think is quite relevant for a lot of us.
Morning, Doc. How are you?
Morning, George.
Good, good. I noticed that the security guard was grumpy, and it made me think, did she wake up in this morning and choose to be grumpy? Or was it an unconscious choice? And then the domino effect of these unconscious choices that we make in life, you know, you're grumpy, you affect the person driving through the boom, or you affect other people in your life, and you've made this unconscious choice to be grumpy. Or is it just a case of state of being?
So I'll answer, as a true psychologist, your question in two ways. First of all, from the perspective of the receiver, I always caution people to just be careful about judging other people's states, because we think we are such good predictors of other people's states, and we are properly useless. We can look at somebody who is looking grumpy, but in that moment, they might be feeling ill, or in that moment, they might have received a worrying text. Or in that moment, they might have a thought, or maybe your car that you're driving reminds them of something that, you know, they reminisce about that has happened in their past. So I can easily show you a picture of somebody and ask you, what do you think this person is feeling? And you will give me a whole narrative of what this person might be going through, which would probably be 99% untrue. So we, even as psychologists, you know, we might look at somebody and go, that person looks unhappy or miserable, but it might not be true. So you always want to get the angle of the person who you're judging, and also what's going on in their lives, to get a true perspective. And by the way, even then it's inaccurate, because they might be feeling something that's completely unrelated, and they might connect the dots in inaccurate ways. So that's number one. Never judge really what the person's going through, because you just don't know. And they most of the time don't know themselves. But to answer your question, attitude is a choice. I define attitude as a commitment to how this story ends. A commitment to how the story ends. And I'll give you an analogy. Imagine we're sitting down, we're watching a movie. This is a horror movie, let's just say. And we start by watching the last 5 minutes of the show, the last 5 minutes of the movie. And the last 5 minutes, the hero, the main character, survives, thrives, runs off into the sunset, is happy, is wonderful. That's the last 5 minutes. Now we go watching the beginning of the movie. And in the first part of the movie, the hero gets shot. What do you think about it? Well, you go, well, I don't care, because I know how it ends. Yeah. What if in the middle of the movie, the hero gets really injured and ends up in hospital? Well, you go, well, I still don't care, because I know how the movie ends. What if the hero gets buried? Well, you're still not going to care, because you've seen the ending. The moment you commit to how a story ends, the beginning and the middle don't matter. You don't marry moments. So when you have a bad moment, it doesn't matter, because you know how the story ends. When you're having a difficult moment, it doesn't matter, because you know how the story ends. I always tell people, don't marry moments. That's like to take a snapshot of our lives and make it the whole movie. We might take a snapshot of a disappointment and think that's our whole lives. We might take a snapshot of a failure and think that's our whole lives. Don't marry moments. Commit to how the story ends and just walk through the movie knowing that everything is going to be okay.
I love that. Love it. All right, so we don't have a lot of time for this, and I don't really want to spend too much time thinking about this because it doesn't bother me that much, but there are probably a few people who are very worried and stressed around the election because people are losing their minds on social media on the possibility that the ANC win or they don't win, possible coalitions, what's going to happen, insecurity, instability. I'm not feeling that way at all, Doc, but I think there probably are a lot of people are. What do you do when you have something like this that you have no control over? Is it worth worrying about?
So, Gareth, you know my philosophy on the coin theory, which is invest your time into things that add value to you. Invest your time into things that you can control. The moment you invest your time into things that you cannot control, you just lose control. So, right. Yes, this is a very uncertain time for people, and people want to want change, people want something different, people are unhappy with their current circumstances, and they're anticipating, and this is what we call anticipatory anxiety, they're anticipating change in some way, or they're anticipating things staying the same, which is scary either way. So I would just advise people to control what they can, focus on things that add value to their existence. And what could we control? I mean, we've been through COVID, so what could we control? Plenty. You can control your relationships at home. You can control your routine. You can control what you focus on in terms of your sense of purpose and your financial stability. So clean house first, do your bedroom first, then focus on other things that you have no control over.
I love it. I also think that people who are really, really invested in this, like I'm expecting this to be the result. And I've looked at these polls and all the rest of it, and to find themselves disappointed. It's like betting on the stock market. You know, if you're really tied up in the result, if everything is about what happens at the end, that story you were telling earlier, and you're going to be deeply disappointed if it doesn't end the way you think, you're setting yourself up for misery, right?
Yeah. You know, Gareth, I always tell people, don't marry the potential of what it could be, marry the reality of what it is. And of course, we live with hope, always live with hope. There's no question. Hope never goes away. But with hope, as the story unfolds, live with what it is, work with what it is. The table is filled with toys. Play with whatever's in front of you. Don't play with what you wish it was, because that's not real. Work with what it is.
Okay, but then that's not in conflict with don't marry moments.
Don't marry. No, so not at all. So in other words, you live with hope. The hope never goes away, but play with what it is. It's about being realistic. So don't marry moments by going, because I feel disappointed, this is my whole life. No, disappointment is real. But what do I do with it in order to eventually get to the end of the story, which is everything is going to be okay?
Got you. That's very, very useful information. You're not anxious about the elections at all, Doc. You're not. This doesn't bother you.
It doesn't bother me at all.
George?
No, I've got a positive view. I think we've reached the bottom of the barrel.
And do you also think that if things go better during this election, it'll improve the economy? I mean, that's true. That's a reality. But exactly. You can't change it.
No. We can all change it, but I can't change it.
So Carl says here, Borge, security guards earn about $4,000 a month to do a fairly dangerous job. What do you want from them? Flick flex?
No. I don't want flick flex. No, a smile.
If I could go back to George's example just quickly, because we do have a minute or two, Doc. And think about how, like, we're never grateful for the things we've already got, right? We just consider those are just default settings now. Human beings, if you have a job, if you're alive, if you're in good physical health, most people don't wake up in the morning and go, oh, wow, I can walk.
Or I'm alive.
But if you can't walk, suddenly that's all you're thinking about once you get to walk again. You don't wake up and go, I haven't got the flu. Oh, yay, I'm so lucky. Or you wake up and you go, well, I'm not dead. Very few people do that. This is a very human condition, right?
Yeah, but perspective, we've got so much to be grateful for from our health to specific relationships to the fact that we have access to this information that, I don't know, 30 years ago you have to open, you know, you have to go to the library to get it. Now it's at the, you know, at our fingertips. We take a lot of things for granted. But again, human beings are incredible at adapting, and we're terrible at predicting, but we're amazing at adapting. And that means we start taking things for granted because we expect it to be the norm. But I always tell people, and certainly my patients, you got to stock take. You got to see what you've got, because it's so easy to forget the good and the benefits of your current existence and to kind of like just kind of sweep it under the carpet and forget about it. But you got to be grateful. We got plenty.
Well, I mean, Marco in the comments says show gratitude every day. And I know Marco had to learn to walk again after an accident. And that's just all the proof you need right there. That guy's comments, the only one you need to pay attention to today. But Doc, you can actually draw up a balance sheet. Like, I think this is not a bad idea for anyone who's feeling sorry for themselves. And if you are having a bit of a rough day, sit down and write down two columns, right? The things that you have that you are grateful for. It might take you a little bit of time to figure that out. You might have to sit and really do quite a lot of analysis and research, and then draw up a list of the things that you want and that are actually attainable. And you suddenly realize, like, A, you've already got enough to live. There's enough there that makes life worth living. And B, you've got enough things that you still want to work for that makes life worth living.
I'll give people a 30-second homework and they can re-listen to this and take notes. There are eight areas of your life that you can stock take. Career, financial security, family, friends, romantic, diet, exercise, and sleep, which is actually divided into three categories: your health, your relationships, and your sense of purpose. And you want to do one, two things. One, you want to ask yourself, what do I have that I should be grateful for every single day? And number two, and I'll split your column into two things: what do I want and how am I going to get it? Not just what do I want, what action am I going to take to get me from point A to point B? Because you don't want to you don't want to live in la la land hoping but not doing anything about it. So what do I have and what do I want and how do I get there?
Love it. That is a masterclass this
Push
morning.
All the cabinet ministers down to local government level. Execution.
Or just execute them. All right. Thank you very much, Doc. Nice to see you.
All right, guys.
And have a good week. We'll check in with you next week. Thank you.
You too, guys.
Dr. Hanan, and very, very useful information there. And actually, the best advice. I think that was like especially that last couple of minutes where he divided it all up into that list of things. Drop that balance sheet every week. See how you're doing.
Exactly.
It's not a bad plan. And it's never going to get boring, right? Because it's the stuff, it's you.
Yeah.
It's your life. It's your stuff. Why would you get bored with that? All right. Patrick Bet David said it best when he said that he is so rich that it doesn't matter who wins the elections, he'll be okay. Well, that's what we should all try to aim for. I think everybody worries about that. Everybody.
Government can wipe out your richness very, very quickly.
Yeah. Nobody's completely immune to this stuff, but there's stuff you can change and stuff you can't.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to walk into the union buildings and say, "I demand you leave." No matter how important you think you are, it's not going to happen. All right, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, George and I are here, and we will be joined by Murray Legg. We're going to talk a little bit about influence, but he's written this interesting op-ed about the three apples that changed human history. Can you guess which three apples they are? It's not that difficult. Think about it, and when we come back, I'll tell you the answer.